You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Welcome to Least of These, where I cover the cases that need it most because every life matters and everyone deserves justice. I'm your host, Leah D., and today I'll be covering the case of Jalecia Battees in the Bronx, New York. Today's case involves the murder and sexual abuse of a child. Viewer discretion is advised. And with that said, let's get right to it. Seven-year-old Jalecia Battees loved all things Anna, Elsa, and Frozen. She loved going to church and, like most little girls, shopping at Target and Walmart. But most of all, Jalecia adored her grandmother, Yolanda Davis. Her grandmother Yolanda was the most constant and reliable presence in her life, and had been since she was a newborn. You see, Jalecia's life had been turbulent from the very beginning. Spectrum News reported that Jalecia's biological mother, Nevasia Jones, lost custody of four children plus Jalecia due to allegations of physical abuse and neglect. Allegations of abuse had also been made against Jalecia's biological father, Julius. And as far as the allegations against Julius, they all came from the same place. Nevasia Jones had filed a number of domestic violence abuse cases against him. However, none of them were ever substantiated, and he was never charged with a crime. But the allegations alone prevented him from getting custody of his biological daughter. Jalecia was born April 26, 2014. Nevasia never even got the chance to leave the hospital with her due to those prior allegations. And at 5 days old, Jalecia was placed in the custody of Yolanda, who was her paternal grandmother. It was a rocky start, sure, but Yolanda was a grandmother through and through, and she instantly fell in love with little Jalecia. From that moment on, it seemed it was the two of them against the world. As Jalecia grew up, their bond only strengthened. Though Yolanda had custody of her granddaughter, she was forced into visitation with her biological mother, Nevasia. The Administration for Children's Services, which is New York's Child Welfare Division, required Yolanda to bring Jalecia for supervised visits with her biological mother. Those visits, well, they didn't go so well. In fact, according to Yolanda, as she spoke to CBS News, Jalecia was terrified of her mother. Yolanda Davis told the outlet that during these visits, Jalecia would, quote, go in the corner and she would be crying. And I would be crying, and I'm saying, y'all don't see this? I mean, does this say something to you guys? This is like a red flag to me. The caseworker's response was, I know, but she has to see her mom. As we all know by now, when it comes to child protection services, reunification with a biological family is oftentimes the goal. And in this case, it seems that it was. Despite Jalecia's obvious distress, the supervised visits continued, and the agency insisted it was important for Nevasia to be a part of Jalecia's life. Eventually, what started out as supervised visits were expanded to court-ordered weekend visits to her mother's apartment in the Bronx. Of course, this wasn't anything either Yolanda nor Jalecia wanted, and it didn't take long before Jalecia was allegedly physically abused by Navasia. Yolanda told CBS News that the date was April 13th of 2018, when then 4-year-old Jalecia returned from a visit and told her that her mother had hit her with a hammer. This was allegedly reported to Child Services, but it seems not too much was done about it. I mean, at some point, Navasia took some court-ordered parenting and anger management courses, but the Child Protection Agency still moved in a direction of reunification, as they often do. And by the way, Yolanda wasn't the only person who made reports of suspected abuse at the hands of Navasia Jones. Neighbors who lived nearby the apartment on Alexander Avenue called in multiple reports of suspected abuse. In January of 2020, a therapist who worked with Jalecia noted her apprehension when it came to her biological mother, writing in a report that Jalecia, quote, presents discomfort when the subject of mom is being introduced. But that reunification train rolled on, despite pleas directly from Jalecia herself. In one instance, Yolanda recorded her granddaughter begging her to call the police because she didn't want to go with her biological mother for a visit. Here is Jalecia speaking to Yolanda, crying and begging her not to take her to visitation. It's tough to hear, but to get the full gravity of this case, I think it's important that we hear Jalecia in her own words. I'm going to warn you, though. It's not easy to listen to, and if you'd rather skip, you can jump ahead about a minute and 20 seconds.
Grandma, are you calling the police?
What am I calling the police for?
Because I don't want to go with Mommy.
Why you don't want to go with Mommy?
Oh, my God.
You're telling me to call the police?
Because I don't want to go with Mommy.
So you're saying call the police? What is wrong at Mommy's house that you don't want to go to Mommy's house? Tell me. It's okay.
Come. Come. Grandma got to do your hair. Why are you crying?
Mommy.
You don't want to see Mommy?
Yeah.
Why?
I want to see Mommy.
Huh?
I want to see Mommy.
You what? You want to see Mommy?
Know.
Why you don't want to see Mommy? Don't cry. You gotta go see Mommy. You don't love Mommy?
No.
Why are you crying like that? We're just going to visit, okay? Don't cry. Why are you crying, Pumpkin? You have to see Mommy. Okay? Don't cry.
No.
Why? What happened? I'm sorry.
I go.
You don't want to go? Why? You don't want to see Mommy? Why not? What happened?
Not only was Yolanda screaming from the rooftops that Jalecia was in danger, Jalecia herself was begging for someone to listen, crying out for the police to save her. But unfortunately, that desperate baby's cries fell on deaf ears. In March of 2020, despite every red flag, despite every warning, Jalecia was sent to her biological mother's apartment for a court-ordered visit. Her grandmother had no way of knowing that that would be the last time she would ever see the granddaughter she had raised again. Jalecia was only supposed to be visiting for a weekend. According to Yolanda, she spoke to Pix11 News. After the weekend was over, Navasia was supposed to bring Jalecia back to her. They were to meet at the police station on Gold Street. But Jalecia never arrived. Yolanda reached out to Child Protective Services and was told that, quote, the child was going to be on an extended stay with her mother. Just like that. No warning, no goodbyes, no chance to explain anything to Jalecia. The child she had raised for 6 years was ripped out of her custody and placed into the home of a woman with a documented history of abuse. What started out as a weekend visit turned into an extended stay, and then a 90-day visit. And that 90-day visit turned into permanent custody being granted to Navasia, against the wishes of Yolanda and the objections made by Jalicia's court-appointed lawyer. Yolanda repeatedly went to the Administration for Children's Services to get her granddaughter back, absolutely dumbfounded as to how she had lost Jalicia and why she was returned to the woman who had abused her. According to Yolanda, the agency blamed the pandemic and a lack of resources. It was March of 2020. The pandemic was in full swing, but laws were still laws, and Yolanda had custody until she didn't. To make things worse, Jalicia had not only been practically ripped out of her arms, Yolanda was granted no visitation. CBS reported that Yolanda asked an ACS caseworker why this decision was made in a recorded conversation, and the caseworker responded, "They probably want to close this case." Yolanda replied, stating, "You can't close the case. The child is scared to death of her." But that's exactly what happened. Yolanda dropped Jalicia off for a weekend, and only because she had to. And now Jalicia had been taken out of her life permanently, and there was nothing it seemed she could do about it. A little over a year passed with Yolanda fighting for Jalicia when the Child Welfare Agency made it official, and Navasia was granted full custody on June 21, 2021. A month and a half later, on August 10th, there was a detective at Yolanda Davis's door. For a moment, her heart was full of hope. Yolanda later recalled to Spectrum News that when she saw detectives from the NYPD at the door of her Brooklyn home, she thought they had come to tell her that they were bringing Jalicia back to her. But instead, they shattered her world. Yolanda Davis was informed that her now 7-year-old granddaughter was gone. At approximately 7:45 a.m. on August 10, 2021, neighbors living on the 10th floor of an Alexander Avenue apartment complex awoke to the screams of 36-year-old Navasia Jones. Jones was calling for help, yelling, "My baby can't breathe. My daughter's not breathing." 20 minutes later, and after being urged by friends and those neighbors, Jones placed a call to 911. That call came in at approximately 8:06 a.m. Jones reported that her 7-year-old daughter Jalicia was unconscious and unresponsive. First responders arrived and found the little girl face down in a bedroom among a Mickey Mouse backpack, a can of Pringles, and a jar of Elmer's glue. She was cold to the touch and had no pulse. They did everything they could to revive her en route to Lincoln Hospital, but after arriving in the emergency department, Jalicia Batties was pronounced deceased just after 9 a.m. NYPD detectives immediately turned their attention to the two adults in the home, Jalicia's biological mother, 36-year-old Navasia Jones, and Jalicia's half-brother, 17-year-old Paul Fine Jr., who I guess technically wasn't an adult, but close enough. Anyway, initially both Jones and Fine's stories were that Jalicia had fallen down about 3 hours prior to the 911 call being placed. After she fell down, her health declined rapidly. She was vomiting and urinating on herself, so they called 911. Or so that was the first story the pair told. In some versions, they claimed Jalicia had fallen down on the floor, and in others that she had fallen against various items in the apartment. Navasia said at one point Jalicia had hit her head on a table and at another point that a desk had fallen on her. She claimed the injury or injuries happened at 5 a.m. and 3 hours later, Jalicia started vomiting and that's when she knew something was wrong. But from the very beginning, detectives knew that those stories were all bullshit. Jalicia's tiny body was covered in bruises. It was obvious that something more than just a simple fall had caused the numerous and severe injuries. To add to that, it didn't take long before Paul Fine Jr.'s story changed yet again. CBS reported that Fine confessed to the Administration for Children's Services and later police that he had assaulted his half-sister. The assaults had taken place between August 8th and 10th, and Fine admitted that he had punched Alicia in the face 8 times the morning of her death. AOL News reported that Fine said he had attacked Alicia that morning, while his mother went to the store at about 5 a.m. And hours later, Jalecia threw up and passed out, so his mother called 911. But why? Why had he attacked a 7-year-old child? According to Fine, it was because Jalecia had taken some snacks, and that annoyed him. As far as Nevasia went, she continually denied she had any role in Jalecia's death. At one point, her story corroborated at least one part of her son's. A police source told Pix11 News that Jones claimed she wasn't home when the fatal injury occurred. She told investigators that at the time she had been out at a local deli. But police reviewed multiple surveillance videos. And you know what they didn't show? Nevasia Jones leaving the apartment that morning or her arriving at any local deli. And further, if the story about her injuries occurring at 5 a.m. were true, who in the hell is desperate for cold cuts at 5 in the morning? And what deli is even open at that ungodly hour? Maybe we're just slow down here in the South, but I don't know of a single deli that is open at 5 a.m. Anyhow, in addition to the story not making any sense, after performing an autopsy on Jalecia's body, the medical examiner would rule out at least part of Fine's story. Jalecia had injuries, both old and new, that covered nearly her entire body. Her entire face, chin, and the back of her right ear were covered in bruises. The bruises on her face were consistent with pattern bruising. The ME determined that they were likely caused by a fist or hand. But those injuries, though they were serious, weren't fatal. The medical examiner determined that Jalecia had been murdered. Her cause of death, blunt force trauma to her abdomen. She had been struck with enough force that her internal organs tore and bled. Her stomach at the time of her death filled with blood. It was clear that Jalecia had been brutally and relentlessly beaten. There were additional injuries on her body to include visible bruises, marks, and scratches on both of her wrists, her clavicle, upper thigh, and mouth. And like I said, the injuries were old and new, revealing a pattern of abuse. This wasn't a one-time attack. But perhaps most devastating of all was the fact that Jalecia had been sexually assaulted. The medical examiner documented injuries consistent with sexual assault and determined that those injuries were inflicted after Jalecia had been beaten and began to experience symptoms caused by the assaults to her abdomen. As this child lay dying after being beaten, she had been sexually assaulted. And the truth was, multiple people saw this coming. They saw it coming from a mile away, and many of them had tried to intervene. CBS News spoke to a neighbor who told the outlet that they had called child services on Nevasia several times prior to the little girl's death. She stated, "I would hear screams. They came, they spoke to them." Tragically, one of those calls had been placed just 5 days before Jalecia was murdered. The neighbor said, "I seen her with a black eye like Thursday or something like that. So that's why I called ACS, because she told me her mother did that to her eye." That was Thursday. By Tuesday, Jalecia was dead. The neighbor last reported seeing the girl the Sunday prior to her death in the elevator at the apartment. Jalecia was with Nevasia, and she was wearing sunglasses. Yolanda Davis also spoke to the outlet and stated, "ACS and SCO services has failed me. I was trying to keep this from happening." Jalecia's biological father, Julius, discussed the failures of the Child Welfare Agency as well. He said, "They didn't care. They knew. They knew what danger she was in because I was letting them know too. And they see a lot of things for themselves as workers. But they brushed it under the rug. They didn't care to do nothing about it." Inside Edition spoke to a family friend that revealed that Jalecia and her biological mother barely had a relationship. The friend went on to say that Jalecia never really even talked about her mom, and that when she observed the two of them at family gatherings or parties, the normally happy and always smiling Jalecia seemed to shut down, as she sometimes did when she was around people she didn't know. She stated, "It would just be like a stranger. She'll be quiet and shut down, more so keeping to herself. She wouldn't be happy to see her or anything." The family friend described two different children, a reserved, uneasy Jalecia around Nevaeja Jones. But when Jalecia was with her grandmother, she was bright and bubbly. She recalled that every time she would visit Yolanda's Brooklyn apartment, Jalecia would be waiting at the door with her Elsa and Anna toys. The friend went on to say that Jalecia loved learning viral TikTok dances, and she loved her father, recalling that Jalecia would take hats off his head and wear them around, and that Yolanda and Jalecia were together in church every Sunday, Jalecia in fancy dresses that she loved showing off. It seemed it was clear to everyone that with Yolanda, Jalecia was loved, wanted, and well cared for.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
But with Nevaeja, something was very wrong. Clear to everyone, that is, except the child welfare agency in charge of her safety. Yolanda was fighting for Jalecia, fighting to get her back in her home where she was safe and loved. And even after Jalecia's murder, Yolanda's fight still wasn't over. You see, despite the overwhelming evidence and Paul Fine Jr.'s confession, neither Nevaeja Jones nor Paul Fine were immediately charged in Jalecia's murder. Nevaeja had been granted custody, so technically as next of kin, she would be responsible for Jalecia's final arrangements and the custody of her remains. Yolanda was told by officials that Nevaeja and her sister were going to be the ones to make the funeral arrangements. Now, police and everyone else suspected Nevaeja and her son were the reason Jalecia was dead, and now the grandmother who had raised her had to fight for the right to make funeral arrangements and claim the little girl's body. Yolanda ultimately won that battle, but with one caveat. Nevaeja Jones was permitted to attend the wake for an hour as part of the agreement. The New York Post reported that 3 months after her death, a funeral was finally held for Jalecia at John's Funeral Home in Brooklyn. Attendees wore bright pink and purple shirts with photos of the little girl. Justice for Jalecia wouldn't come swiftly. 10 long months passed after she was murdered before Paul Fine Jr. and Nevaeja Jones were arrested on assault and murder charges, and Fine was also charged with first-degree sexual abuse. On June 29, 2022, Bronx District Attorney Darcell Clark announced the arrest with a press release. The DA stated in part, "A woman and her teenage son caused the death of her innocent, defenseless 7-year-old daughter, Jalecia, in their Bronx home. The child was beaten and sexually abused and denied medical attention. This is a revolting, disturbing case of brutality and callousness." Clark went on to say that a 10-month investigation with the NYPD had led to the indictments, and that the investigation had revealed that Jalecia was failed throughout her brief life. The signs of torment were there, but not acted on. Let's talk about those signs of torment. I mean, we've already gone over a few. The fact is that records showed a long history of involvement with child welfare. In total, 5 children had been taken away from Nevaeja at one point or another, four of them before Jalecia was even born, one of them being Nevaeh's son, Paul Fine. Police had been to Nevaeh Jones' apartment multiple times. According to the DA, over the years, officers filed at least 9 domestic abuse reports involving the family. And according to a law enforcement source who spoke to Pix 11 News, first responders had been called to aid Jalecia at least 5 times, and numerous complaints had been filed against Nevaeh. The details of those calls for aid and complaints have not been made public. In 2014, a family court had tried to return Jalecia back to Nevaeh, but Children's Services appealed that decision, stating that returning Jalecia to her biological mother put her life in danger, and the appellate judges agreed, ruling that Jalecia was to remain with Yolanda and finding that despite completing mandated parenting skills and anger management programs, Nevaeh Jones was still, quote, prone to unpredictable emotional outbursts, even on supervised visits with her older children, and that she was, quote, easily provoked and agitated. The judges wrote further, until the mother is able to successfully address and acknowledge the circumstances that led to the removal of the other children, we cannot agree that returning Jalecia, even with the safeguards imposed by the family court, would not present an imminent risk. And sure, that ruling was handed down 6 years prior to Jalecia's murder. And by that time, ACS reversed their decision, unceremoniously handing Jalecia over to her biological mother. But what had changed? Certainly, Jones hadn't addressed and acknowledged the circumstances that led to the removal of her children. The law had been called with allegations of abuse at least 9 times, one of them being 5 days prior to Jalecia's murder, after that neighbor saw the little girl with the black eye. Nothing had changed. Nevaeh was an abuser, a documented one, and despite a few parenting classes mandated by the court, she had done nothing to earn the right to be back in her children's lives. But still, the Child Welfare Agency handed her right over. Before we move on, let's dive a little deeper into that last report of abuse, the allegation made by the neighbor days before Jalecia was killed. Police revealed that they had no knowledge of the black eye incident until after Jalecia was murdered, because it had been reported to Child Welfare and not through 911. The agency had 5 entire days to take action, but they did nothing. They hadn't even sent the report over to police, and it cost a little girl her life, and they had little to say about it. After the announcement of the charges from the district attorney, the Administration of Children's Services declined to comment, of course, citing confidentiality laws. But a lawyer for Yolanda Davis stated unequivocally the decision to return Jalecia to her biological mother had been made by ACS, at the recommendation of a foster care nonprofit, SCO Family Services, which managed her care. Jalecia Batties was failed over and over and over again, and unfortunately, the failures would keep coming. Ten months after 7-year-old Jalecia Batties had been murdered, her biological mother, 36-year-old Nevaeh Jones, and half-brother, 17-year-old Paul Fine, were both arrested and charged with assault and murder. Paul Fine was additionally charged with first-degree sexual assault. The medical examiner had determined that Jalecia had injuries consistent with a sexual assault, and that those injuries occurred after she had been beaten and likely after the fatal injuries had occurred. As this 7-year-old baby lay dying, she had been violated in unimaginable ways. And ultimately, her half-brother confessed to the sexual assault. A high-ranking police official told AOL News that Fine had admitted he sexually molested his sister and played a role in her murder. The official telling the outlet, "Mom and brother are both culpable. They both had a role in it, but who delivered the fatal blow is not clear." Police officials claim they weren't sure who delivered the fatal blow, which is why what I'm about to tell you next is all the more infuriating. Fast forward to the spring of 2025. Jaleesa's paternal family, along with the rest of the world, was shocked to learn that Nevaeja Jones was given a plea deal. Nevaeja Jones pled guilty to a single count of manslaughter and claimed that she acted completely alone. Her son had no role in Jaleesa's murder whatsoever. She pled guilty to manslaughter in exchange for a 15-year prison sentence. She admitted to violently beating her child to death and faced only 15 years. At the same time, Paul Fine Jr. recanted his confessions, his lawyers claiming he falsely confessed to taking part in the murder to protect his mother. And the charges against Paul Fine Jr. were dropped. All of the charges, the murder charge and the first-degree sexual assault. He walked out of court a free man in March of 2025, smiling, giggling, and laughing it up with his attorneys. And remember, Jones only pled guilty to manslaughter. With the charges against Fine dropped, no one, and I do mean no one, would be held accountable for sexually assaulting a 7-year-old. So far, the Bronx District Attorney's Office has declined to comment publicly about the case against Fine. And if that ain't enough to piss you off, hold on, because there's more. Nevaeja Jones was supposed to be formally sentenced on March 13, 2025. Yolanda Davis and Jaleesa's father, Julius Baddies, were in the courtroom prepared to read their victim impact statements. The attorneys, the prosecutors, and members of the community were all gathered to watch as Nevaeja's fate was sealed. But Nevaeja? She refused to come to court because the media was present. She literally just refused to walk into the courtroom. And apparently, nobody could force her to. Jaleesa's biological father, Julius, said she was just working the system, stating, "She's running away from what I have to say. She's scared to face her daughter's father after what she did. She needs to be dragged out and hear what we have to say. This is her own little mind game of working the system." And at least temporarily, it worked. Bronx Judge Joseph McCormack refused to sentence Jones without her present in the courtroom, so the sentencing was rescheduled for June 16. The judge did make it clear that Nevaeja Jones would be in the courtroom on that day. And on June 16, 2025, Nevaeja was in the courtroom. But the antics and absolute disregard for anyone other than herself continued. In Yolanda's victim impact statement, which was read by Bronx Assistant DA Alexandria Militano, Yolanda addressed Jones directly, writing, "I just really feel like you deserve more than 15 years. You deserve life after killing a precious child that was innocent, that wasn't asked to be brought into this world." Nevaeja Jones snapped back, "I don't feel no sympathy for you at all." She then accused Julius Baddies of abuse and stated, "Don't sit here in the court and put on a front like that. You know how it went down." When it was time for Julius Baddies to make his victim impact statement, he opened up stating, "Nevaeja Jones murdered my daughter." Jones screamed from the defense table, "You have proof I murdered your daughter? My daughter?" The judge tried to get things under control, but Jones argued with him, telling him that she wasn't interested in anything Julius or Yolanda had to say. The proceeding pressed on, Judge McCormack telling Jones that Julius and his mother Yolanda were going to be speaking. She responded, "Okay, but that doesn't mean I have to listen to them." She was ultimately taken out of the courtroom by officers. As she was dragged away, she shouted, "I took responsibility for the sake of my son being released." The sentencing was rescheduled once again, and the judge seemingly considered scrapping the plea deal altogether and sentencing Jones to the maximum, which would be 25 years in prison. And he should have, but that's not exactly what happened. The third time was a charm, and on June 23, 2025, Jones was formally sentenced to 17 years in prison, 2 years added on for her repeated court outburst in which she minimized her guilt, violating the conditions of the plea agreement. But even that doesn't seem like a fraction of the justice Jaleesa Baddies deserve. Yolanda Davis spoke to Pix 11 News and remembered Jaleesa as a perfect child who never gave anyone a problem. She had neat handwriting and loved going to Target and Walmart. She was compassionate and loved to sing. Yolanda told the outlet that Jalecia was an usher at church who loved the bishop. In the aftermath of Jalecia's murder and the beating deaths of three other children, the New York Times reported that the city made some changes. They appointed a captain to oversee child abuse cases in the Police Special Victims Division, began requiring home visits by police in suspected abuse cases when someone in the family has a domestic violence history, and restarted a cross-training program between the police and ACS. Will that be enough to protect the next Jalecia? I guess only time will tell. If you suspect a child is being abused, please reach out for help. It's better to report it and be wrong 1,000 times than to be right once and not report. For resources and more information about how to safeguard the children in your life, visit earlyopenoften.org. And if you have reason to believe that a child is in immediate danger, please contact your local child welfare agency and dial 911. And that, my friends, is all I've got for this week. Be sure to join me next Thursday for an all-new episode. Until then, you can find me on Instagram at least_of_these or my Facebook at least_of_these_podcast. And if you're sick of ad interruptions, I've got good news for you. You can get all your episodes ad-free, just the way you like them, for just $2 a month. And as a member of Patreon, you'll be the first to be notified when new tiers will be launched with exclusive episodes and a few bonus surprises. Head on over to patreon.com/leastofthese to support the show today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring. If you know something, say something. And until next time, be good to each other. All right, y'all. Two things we got to talk about tonight. First, it is absolute bullshit that charges against Paul Fine Jr. were dropped. Bullshit, I say. People don't just confess to being pedophiles for fun. I 100% believe he is the one who sexually assaulted Jalecia, and he should be under the jail. I also don't believe he had no role in the murder either. I think these two evil bastards thought if they both copped to it, then they'd get off. And look, it worked for one of them. You're telling me there's no surveillance of either of them leaving the apartment in the hours leading up to Jalecia's death, so they were both in that apartment at the time she was murdered, and only one of them was involved? I don't buy that. I wouldn't buy it even if the shit was on clearance. This is state-assisted housing. This is New York. That apartment was likely the size of a Cracker Jack box. And what? He didn't know what was happening and he wasn't involved? Yeah, no, that's not it. They're both guilty, and they both deserve a life sentence. Allegedly, in my opinion and all that. It really gets my goat that people who harm children are handed down such light sentences. But they are. And this case is a prime example. It shouldn't be this way. It should be, you don't pass go, you don't collect $200, you never breathe another free, fresh breath of God's good air. And that's just all there is to it. There is no excuse for the sentences and lack of sentences handed down in this case. And the second thing, I don't know who or how many times this needs to be said to our government or Child Protective Services or whoever the hell. But reunification, above all else, is asinine. Should reunification be the goal? I don't know. That completely depends on what caused the child to be taken in the first place. There are times, plenty of them, where reunification should be the opposite of the goal. It's literally the worst case scenario, and this case is one of them. repeated abuse, repeated. And this child was forced to be subjected to that abuse repeatedly by the people whose job it is to quite literally protect her. COVID? Case backlog? Yeah, my ass. I literally do not care. This child had a safe, loving, stable home, and the Child Welfare Agency took her out of that safety and threw her into the hands of two predators. And this ain't the first time. You know what it always reminds me of? It always reminds me of Konarak Sinisome. I'm probably not saying his last name right. I hope I am, but it's a hard one. If you don't remember, he was the 14-year-old victim of Jeffrey Dahmer's, who escaped and was wandering around drugged and naked when police were called. And when officers arrived, they returned him to Dahmer, believing his made-up story that this 14-year-old boy was an adult and a consenting sexual partner. He was a child, but police didn't look into it and handed him right over to the monster that is Jeffrey Dahmer. And of course, hours later, he was killed. It's one of the most horrific details, I think, of any true crime story I've ever heard. And every time a child is just handed over by officials to their abuser, it reminds me of that story. I can't imagine the feeling of being safe and then knowing you're about to be hand-delivered to your abuser, and nothing, and no one, not even the police, are gonna stop it. It makes me sick to my stomach to just think about. Listening to that audio recording of Jalecia begging to stay, begging for the police to help her, and knowing how this story ends, I just don't think there's anything more heartbreaking than that. I'd like to end things on a happy note, but in this case, I just don't think that's possible. This child was failed in life and even in death, and we've got to do better. And that's about all I got to say about that. Y'all know I love you more than my luggage, and I can't wait to talk at you next week. But until then, bye, boo thing.